As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Starcast, the German football pod, brought to you by The Athletic. It's all over. Bayern have won the Bundesliga again. Or have they? Christoph Biermann is here to tell us whether the title race is really over following the Champions win at Schalke on Sunday. There's another disappointing Dortmund defeat to digest, a big win for Eintracht Frankfurt, and a big section on Mainz. Yes, Mainz. Talking of which, we'll be telling you all about Chelsea's new managerial appointment. But first of all, we have special correspondent Mark Schwitzky standing by to give us the background on the big changes in the German capital. He writes for Hertha-based blog, which begs the question, Hertha, how low can you go? All of this and more in Starcast. Hello gents and hello dear listener. Just before we get going, your reminder that The Athletic's fine content is available for just £3.99 at the moment. Go to theathletic.com/starcastpod to sign up. Christoph and Mark, we have to start in the capital. Another defeat for Bruno Labbadia, which proved to be his last one, as well as for Michael Preetz, the sporting director, who'd been there for what? Was it 12 years?
Almost 12 years.
Was this always coming, or was it still a bit of a surprise for you, Mark?
It was a bit of a surprise, just because there were so many reasons over the past years and so many chances to sack him that you didn't really believe they were gonna do it now. But of course, I think there was no alternative to this decision. I think it has a lot to do with Carsten Schmidt as the new CEO of Hertha.
Yeah, go on. We want to know more.
Okay, so Carsten Schmidt is now since December in the club, and I think in his last 55 days, actually, he so observed the club and how people are acting in their roles and how decisions are made. And I think this was one point that this wasn't efficient enough, not good enough, and I think he saw some problems there. But also, of course, the results of the last weeks and games were the main point for sacking Michael Preetz and Bruno Labbadia, because you now need a turning point in the season, and you only achieve it with new faces, I think.
Christoph, a few months ago, it was just a year ago, I think, we were laughing a little bit about Jürgen Klinsmann and his dossier, saying, you know, Michael Preetz is one of those guys who's just always a bit too comfortable. But there was some truth in it, wasn't there? And maybe Preetz going had to happen as part of this new Hertha emerging as a bigger club?
At least, I think, with the investors having come in, his position has changed, or it was more under pressure or more under scrutiny than before. He was protected for many years through a lot of crisis by Gegenbauer, the Hertha boss, the president of the club. I mean, they have been relegated twice without sacking Michael Preetz. But I think after Tenner and Lars Winters came in, there were constant complaints from that side towards Michael Preetz, because they had the impression that Hertha under him was underachieving. And I think if you put the investment they made and the results they get, you have at least for this period, you have proof of that. And so it was logical. And I think there was also no chance for Gegenbauer anymore to protect Michael Preetz. And also because with Carsten Schmidt in as the new CEO, the power within the football of Hertha, so the footballing company of Hertha had changed. And I think we all saw it coming in a way over the last weeks, because Hertha was way below what you could expect from them. And one reason was Bruno Labbadia was not able to develop this talented squad into a team on the one hand side, and maybe that there were too many flaws in how this pool of talent was put together, and that is probably also for the successor of Bruno Labbadia difficult to form a decent team out of it.
Of course, Labbadia failed, but it wasn't easy for him, not at all. Like, because in the last summer before the season was starting, Hertha lost so important players like Ibisevic, like Schelbred, Kraft, Kalou, people who are extremely important for the climate of the team and how that these players are a team. They forged them together where they were sort of the glue of the team, and you lost them. But you didn't replace them in any way. I would only Alexander Schwolo, the new keeper, I think, has the right mentality. But other than that, this is no team. And of course, for the new players, then it's hard to settle in and to perform at the highest level, because this is no team. They didn't grow together, and there is no team mentality. And of course, for new players, it's very they struggle then, and also Labbadia struggled to put them together to a team. And of course, he didn't do everything right, of course not. But I think that Michael Preetz, with his plans for the team, didn't help him a lot. Maybe not at all.
I think you made a point on Twitter, Mark, that Labbadia was unable to work in a stadium with a crowd for his entire reign, effectively. Yeah. Was that an issue as well, or perhaps could it have been even worse with the crowd there, seeing Hertha's performances, especially in recent weeks?
I think it would have been harder. First of all, Hertha is not a team which is performing well under pressure. We saw it in the first derby against Union. They collapsed. I think being without the supporters in the stadium was a bit of a, I don't know. It didn't have been bad for them, and I think the pressure would have been very, very high, and people would have stated their mind regarding Hertha and their performances. So I think it would have been harder. Yeah,
Christoph, I slightly disagree, because I think when we talk about the problems that Hertha is having, and obviously a key problem seems to be to put together a team that works as a team on the pitch. There were a lot of new players coming in the last year, and most of these new players never had an idea who they were playing for. And I think maybe that would have helped if they would have experienced a full stadium, or at least a play in front of 50 or 60 thousand people, and see. I mean, on good days, there can be a very good atmosphere at the Olympic Stadium with the Ostkurve, so the east part of a stadium. supporting the team and so on. And so all these new players coming to a new city were playing into this kind of void. And also a lot of them were, or some of them were coming from abroad. They didn't know nothing about the Bundesliga. And I mean, it's all wild speculation if it would have been going this way or that way, if it would be more pressure or would have helped them to settle in. But I think it's I'd rather see a chance missed that Hertha was not playing in front of their fans.
I guess we'll never know. The question is, I think, will they get this reset right? Carsten Schmidt is in charge now. He seems to be the new powerful man, maybe even more so than Gegenbauer, the president. Is he effectively representing the interests of Lars Winters, the investor, Mark, or is he more independent than that?
Yeah, we're going to find out, right? He's new at the club, but he already told that regarding the decision who's going to coach the team and things like that, Tenor and Lars Winters have no saying in that. And he made that very clear, the point. So I think he wants to be independent. Of course, he has to speak with Lars Winters. That's pretty natural in this partnership, but I think he wants to be independent and wants to be the strong man and not want to speak for both parties. I think this isn't going to be possible anyway. So I think he wants to stand for Hertha and not for Winters, but of course he has to hold up a conversation with them.
I think that Carsten Schmidt has a trust of Tenor, and so he can be a kind of moderator if there needs there is some moderation needed between the club, between Gegenbauer or until Saturday or Sunday, between Tenor and Michael Preetz and the whole sporting side of the club. So, but right now I also would see him more as an independent role of a moderator.
Can we say anything about what happens next? There's been talk about Paul Dardai coming back as a stand-in coach, interim caretaker, until the end of the season. Are Hertha and, you know, the people in charge now, are they looking for a big name, for a transformative manager? And who's going to be the new sporting director? Mark and Christoph, what are you hearing? You're always well informed, the two of you.
So there were some speculations about Ralf Rangnick. I don't think it's realistic, but it could be. I wouldn't rule it out, but I don't think it's realistic. I think because of this short period of time for finding the next coach, it's going to be Paul Dardai. I think some newspapers like The Kicker already wrote about that. And I could imagine that he is going to take over until the season ends, and then the new big solution is going to come to the club. So maybe this is the plan. I don't think you would now find the big, huge solution for the club.
I agree. I think it's very likely that Paul Dardai is taking over as a kind of caretaker manager towards the end of the season. He has a trust of the club. He has a trust also of most of the fans. He has been in charge of Hertha for 5 years. And I think he at least would be able to finish the season decently. And that's, I think, nothing more can be accepted. Now the caretaker sports director is Arne Friedrich. If he is more than that, and if he turns out to be the in-house solution for the future, I think needs to be seen. I think it's a chance for him to get more profile. But altogether, my impression really is that as Hertha is thinking big, they will continue to look for a big name and a big solution. And Ralf Rangnick obviously could be that man, but he has so many options. So many clubs are interested in him. And I think he is always still having an eye also to become a German national coach. So I think it will be difficult for him to easily say, come on, I'll do it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the problem with Hertha is that this is such a massive project. I think the idea that you're just going to pump 200 million euros into it and make a big change was always flawed. And it's going to take a lot more building work from the ground up, perhaps even with the new stadium, to get Hertha into the position where they can be a genuine power, a sustainable force in the Bundesliga. It'd be really, really interesting if that happens. Mark, before I let you go, is there any indication whether Lars Windhorst is prepared or able to put more money into the club? We've heard stories about some part of the money not coming or being conditional on some success. Is that big investment already gone, basically, or is there more coming?
I think he is open to that. Of course, there were some financial problems in the summer, which came out later in the season. But he told the club that he wants to stay for maybe a decade, 2 decades. And this would come with a lot more of money, of course. I don't know how much more, and I don't know if he's going to pump more into the club. But I think there's the possibility, yeah. But I think it's linked to the strategic plans of the club, of Carsten Schmidt, of Arne Friedrich, who's going to be coach. Is he trustworthy? Is he the hope? And does he create enough hope for the Tenor and Lars Windhorst to invest even more money?
We always talk about Lars Windhorst as if he would be dealing with his personal money. He is dealing with the money of investors. And maybe they also ask him some tough questions now, where their money has been going in the time since he stepped in at Hertha. Maybe he is also under pressure from this side. So it will be interesting to see what will happen in the month to come.
That should be interesting indeed. Just in terms of the sporting situation in immediate terms. I mean, Hertha now flirting with not perhaps relegation, but getting sucked into the fight for the playoff spot. They're only 2 points clear of Köln after that 4-1 home defeat against Bremen. Are you reasonably confident that with Pal Dardai in charge, things will improve at least to the point that they don't have to worry about going to the Bundesliga 2 next season, Mark?
I think so, yes, because he took over 5 years ago in a pretty similar situation, but now he's even got better players. Of course, we talked about that it's not a team right now, but I think this is the biggest achievement of Pal Dardai in the past years, to create such a team atmosphere. And I think there are some speculations that Zeke Neuendorf, another club legend, is going to assist him. And I think in this union, they could create such a team atmosphere. I would be confident that Hertha is going to stay in the league, in the Bundesliga with them, but it won't be a pretty finish.
Well, I wish you all the best, Mark. You've been long suffering, as many Hertha fans have been. Let's see if this is going to all turn out for the better.
And while we'll talk about Europe.
Yes, exactly. We'll have you back to then really confirm your official participation in the Super League as a capital club. Until such time, do pop in before, if possible.
Thanks for having me.
Right, Christoph. One big name that is not going to end up at Hertha as a new manager is Thomas Tuchel. It's confirmed now that he will come in. Not officially confirmed, but sources have confirmed that he will come in to succeed Frank Lampard at Chelsea. Now, for those who perhaps haven't been following his fortunes so closely, what kind of manager is he? And will he be a good fit for Chelsea, in your view?
I think so. He is, to start with it, he tactically, technically, and so on, he is just a very good manager. And I think over the years now, he has assembled a lot of experience dealing with star players, dealing with difficult situations. I mean, he had Mbappé and Neymar at Paris Saint-Germain. He had a sports director he didn't get well along with for quite a while at PSG. He has a bit the reputation of constantly creating conflict with his superiors, especially since his time at Borussia Dortmund. But I think he is a very good choice for Chelsea. I still see him as one of the best German-speaking managers around.
How do you think he's going to get on with the people in power at Chelsea? If there's anything he's perhaps not so good at is managing upwards. What do you think? Will he have learned from his experiences at Dortmund? Well, he fell out with the sporting director and with Sven Mislintat, the coach. Will he have learned from perhaps, you know, fighting about transfer market policies and decisions with Leonardo at PSG?
I hope so. I don't know. Maybe we judge him a bit unfairly. I don't know the insights at PSG well enough to say if it was his problem or if it was a problem from the side of the club. But I think that's it's a fair point to ask this question, and we have to see how he gets along with his superiors at Chelsea.
What kind of football do you think he'll play with this team?
Good football. Good football means I always found him good in bringing out the best out of his players. That dates back to his time at Mainz, where he was fantastically overachieving with a young team, but a team also with obvious limitation. I think he also managed to play a lot of good, interesting offensive football with Borussia Dortmund. I mean, the image was a bit blurred when you look at PSG, because on the one hand side he had a fantastic talent. They were easily winning the French championship. On the other hand side, they looked a bit like underachieving in the Champions League, apart from this year where they reached the final. He has a fantastic pool of talents at Chelsea, and I would be sure that you see them play better football than we have seen in recent months.
Yeah, I think the structure that he would bring to those teams should be interesting. I think he is, of all the new breed of German managers, perhaps the most varied and most hard to quantify or to label with a specific tactical... Yeah, label. because his teams are influenced from the pressing side of things in the German school as well as the possession side of things of Guardiola. Would that be fair?
I think that's a more precise description. That's what I wanted to say with a maybe a bit vague term, good football. And good football for me means that a coach is able to look at what he has and then makes the best out of it. And that is exactly what you were saying, that he just has one idea about football, but he has several and then is choosing the one that fits best with his team.
Yeah, it should be really interesting what happens at Stamford Bridge.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Thomas Tuchel, of course, made his name as a successor, eventual successor of Jurgen Klopp. There was a manager in between at Mainz, where for the 5 years of his reign, he amassed more points than anyone else apart from the top four in German football at the time. A tremendous achievement, which then got him his next big job at Dortmund. Now, Christoph, you told me something over the weekend which I found was at first maybe a joke or something I didn't quite understand, but you said, can we talk about Mainz? Well, of course we can, but why?
The obvious reason could be that they were defeating, surprisingly, RB Leipzig 3-2, their only second win this season. But the more interesting thing was they made a big transfer last week. What they did in the middle of the relegation fight, that is almost no relegation fight for them anymore, because the gap is or was before the weekend too big, or it looked too big. They sold Jean-Philippe Mateta to Crystal Palace, or they gave him on loan. And towards the end of the season, Crystal Palace can or needs to buy him. And that is at first a bit bizarre, because he was scoring half of the very few goals. So he was scoring 7 out of the 15 goals Mainz had scored before last weekend. And why did they do it? They did it because... I think it's a sign that they have overcome their identity crisis. In recent years, they signed a lot of interesting players from France, from Portugal, and so on, for whom Mainz, so that was the idea, was a kind of stepping stone to bigger clubs. One of the examples is Jean-Philippe Gerbamin, who they sold for 25 million euros to Everton. But the guy, he's an Ivorian French player who is unfortunately was ever since injured with two very heavy injuries. And so what they did, they made Mainz into this kind of stepping stone club, and it worked for a while, but over the time they have kind of lost their identity, and too many players were with their minds already on their way to somewhere else, and Jean-Philippe Mateta was a perfect example for it. He was a star player in a club that doesn't really need star players, but that needs a strongly knitted team. And I think what happened in recent weeks at Mainz is trying to come back to what Mainz is standing for. So one sign was that Christian Heidel returned as a CEO for the club. Christian Heidel is the man who almost instantly developed Mainz out of nowhere. The man who found invented Jürgen Klopp as a coach, who brought in the then youth team coach Thomas Tuchel, and made Mainz from a very provincial small club into a Bundesliga club. Heidel failed at Schalke, I think it's fair to say that, and now he's back. Since then, they trying to be Mainz again, and also that they brought in Bo Svensson, who had been playing for the as a coach, who had been playing for Mainz, who had worked as a coach in their youth team, and then spent some time at Liefering in the Austrian second division. Liefering is a feeder club for RB Salzburg, And this is like minds finding back to themselves. And in that respect, selling Mateta was a kind of symbolic act. And although it might have been looked bizarre from the outside, and it's interesting that after this, these moves, they managed to beat huge favorite RB Leipzig. And interestingly, when you look at the numbers, it was okay that they did. It wasn't just a lucky win. So I think a tremendous week for Mainz. I have my doubts if they can close the gap and really jump back into the relegation fight, but at least they are now where they want to be.
Just one more question on Mainz. I think we've all seen that they've lost their sort of special Mainz factor over the last few years. The football had kind of lost its identity as well, different coaches, different styles. So I think it makes sense, as you said, to reconnect with that. But on the player side, on the squad side, what alternative do Mainz have apart from buying players that want to see the club as a stepping stone? That's always going to be the case, isn't it, for a club of their size. So I guess the togetherness, the glue then has to come from the crowd, maybe, from the manager. I mean, you cannot change the structure of where they sit in the Bundesliga, can you?
But I think it was just too much. I think if you have two, three highly talented players on their way to bigger clubs, it's perfectly okay. But if you have a team where almost everybody is thinking, yo, I'm only here for a year or two, and then I go to the real world, that's not good. And I think it's not the idea to completely abandon the concept, but to balance it more out.
Well, we see, as you said, if it's going to be enough for them to stay up, that win has given them a bit of hope, a bit of positive momentum as well. I think one word on Leipzig, was this one of those games where they were just beaten by a team that seemed to be a little bit smarter in the decisive moments. Julian Nagelsmann afterwards talked about the pitch being in such a bad state that he had to change his lineup to become a little bit less possession-based. And that almost English direct style that Mainz played worked wonders.
Yeah, and Leipzig surprisingly made more mistakes than they would normally do. Even Peter Gulacsi, the goalkeeper, who was excellent this season so far, made a very obvious mistake before one of the goals. And Emil Forsberg were also saying afterwards that they were maybe not concentrated enough for most of the match. So yeah, it was very surprising to see Leipzig to struggle this way. Also, when you see that they conceded three goals where they had only conceded, I don't know, nine or so before that. So I think it was a huge disappointment for Julian Nagelsmann, because he was making this nice joke when he was asked about the if they are still a contender for the German title. He was saying, yeah, Bayern is in the ICE right now, so that's a high-speed train in Germany, and we are in a regional train, and so the tempo has with the ambition for Leipzig this season in the Bundesliga has slowed down a bit.
Well, Leipzig at least I think can be maybe reasonably happy in a strange way that Thomas Tuchel is going to Chelsea, because that will maybe take away one of the clubs, I think, that had an eye on Julian Nagelsmann as far as the summer is concerned, if not earlier. But they suffered a real setback with that defeat. 7 points, the gap now between them in second place and Bayern, who won fairly effortlessly against Schalke on Sunday. Is that now it for Leipzig and everyone else, Christoph?
It feels like. I mean, we have been talking about this kind of crisis of Bayern, and but nobody took advantage of it. If it was a crisis, or it could have been looking more like a crisis, if If Leipzig wouldn't have dropped points, if Dortmund wouldn't have dropped points again. And and so it's Bayern again alone at the top of the table, as always. And as always, too early in the season.
Although the two previous seasons weren't like that, of course. Remember, they were quite in the mix still a year ago when Hansi Flick had just taken over. The year before, Dortmund were having a fantastic first half of the season. I think they had 9 points of a gap between them and Bayern at some stage. But yes, this time, perhaps the weakness of the teams below them more pronounced than Bayern's own weakness, or perhaps the starting position is just so different that Bayern can afford that weakness. Having said all that, I was actually fairly impressed with them against Schalke. A Schalke team that played with a bit of esprit, with a bit of commitment, that looked quite aggressive, that tried everything within their own means to make it difficult for Bayern. But what I found in this game, that Bayern had a really nice structure to the game, something that had been missing in recent weeks. Now, was that a bit of an illusion because Schalke pressed fairly late and allowed Bayern a bit more control in midfield? Or did you also see maybe signs of a bit more control coming back to Bayern's game?
So I have a lot of shots of Schalke in my mind when I think about the match. And they had a very good chance from a header by Marc Uth to go 1-0 up early in the match. So I think Bayern gave away way too many chances still. Didn't you think so?
Certainly in the beginning. I must admit, I tuned in 5 minutes late, and I think that might have.
But it was not only in the first 5 minutes. So
No, you're right. Schalke did have chances, but Bayern, I felt, just especially after taking the lead, just had a lot more control and nice build up play and some nice combinations that I had seen in recent weeks.
Yeah, I think their way is showing up. I would agree. It's still not fantastic, super Bayern, but now it's decent Bayern. And also, I think it helps them that there is not much pressure from the teams below them. So you don't have these huge discussions about them. Are they in a crisis? Are they not in a crisis? What's going wrong? And et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, they looked good. They looked, they played convincing football and it was better than in weeks before.
The same cannot be said about Köln, unfortunately. They lost 3-0 at Hoffenheim. And Hoffenheim and Köln are not sort of the teams that we talk about that much. But I think we have to talk about Köln because they're now looking increasingly as if they have to go via the relegation playoff spot unless they can pick up some points. Do you think things have run its course there with Markus Gisdol in charge?
We said last week that the psychology of the relegation fight has changed a bit with Mainz and Schalke seem already to be relegated. And so I think it also buys Markus Gisdol probably some time, but his main problem, or the main problem Cologne is having, and you could see it also at Hoffenheim. Cologne didn't play badly, but they again played without a nominal striker, and until Anthony Modest came in, who gave away a penalty, but when it was already 3-0 for Hoffenheim. And this problem is haunting FC Cologne throughout the season. Most of their goals come from set pieces. Almost nothing comes from open play. Their main striker, Sebastian Andersson, is still injured. It's difficult to judge if a different coach would be able to turn this situation around in dramatic fashion without a different personnel. So right now, my impression is that Markus Gisdol is at least keeping the cool and not losing his nerve so far, and that might help him to go on for a while or until he has more options in attack. We have to see.
We have to see indeed. I mean, Köln is another of those clubs where I'm just thinking, is it almost good for him that there are no crowds? With a crowd, they would have many more points. So on a pure sporting level, no. But the kind of reaction, the criticism, you know, the anger from the fans at this point would be a lot to deal with for everyone else. Maybe it's a little bit easier in such a crisis when you don't necessarily see the reaction of those who are disappointed, who feel let down by the team's performances on a daily basis almost. But talking of all these things, the mind inevitably turns to Borussia Dortmund, Christoph, because they have been an enigma, a disappointment to themselves, a frustration for you and me, for most neutrals, I would suggest. And this was another one of those games for them. 4-2 they lost against the Borussia Mönchengladbach on Friday night in what might well have been Marco Rose's last win against Dortmund, because he will, of course, well, he might move over to the other Borussia at the end of the season and see if he can sort them out. I mean, do we have to look at deeper issues now that go beyond the coaching? Is there something with the way the team has been put together that somehow makes them susceptible for these kind of results, with a lack of balance, with a lack of focus, set pieces, not defended well? Has this almost become part of the DNA of this team?
If that would be so, the worries would be even bigger, because, I mean, for Borussia Dortmund, it's a very important fight to at least finish in the top four, because it would be a massive financial blow if they wouldn't qualify for the Champions League. I found them a bit too harshly punished at Mönchengladbach, because they had a very difficult start of the game, where they were almost overrun by Borussia Mönchengladbach, but then managed to escape from the pressure and turn the match completely around. And I found them in between very, very good. But yes, you're right. I mean, you see them playing very good football. And then they were giving away very easy goals, and I was a bit angry, to be honest, about Marco Reus, because he was, after the match, he was like, yeah, we always have this problem with set pieces, and then I was thinking, yeah, because of you also. There was this free kick before the equalizer from Borussia Mönchengladbach, where it became 2-2. When Lars Stindl was shooting, and it was Marco Reus who opened the way for the shot. So Roman Bürki could only see it very lately and deflect it. And then there was this equalizer by Nico Elvedi. And if Marco Reus would have been standing there and had been hit by the ball there, there wouldn't be any problem. And if you have situations like that constantly, it's a bit strange, because on the other end of the pitch, you play sometimes very good in the best moments, even breathtaking of football, and throw it away at the in your own half. It's very difficult to explain, and it's a lot about, there have been a lot about discussions about the mentality of this Borussia Dortmund team and the ability to concentrate, especially at set pieces, and if Edin Terzic on, and if the team is not finding a solution to these problems, they will have serious problems to qualify for the Champions League. And I think if they put together the team for the next seasons or the next years to come, I think it will be their main focus will be to find players who are able to concentrate on both ends of the pitch for 90 minutes. I think it's very important because we don't see that right now.
Mm-hmm. And are we any surer about the long-term successor there of Lucien Favre? Do you think it is all coming down to Marco Rosa moving over to the other Borussia?
He still is the main target, but I think the door is still open for Edin Terzic. If he is able to solve the problems we have been talking about, there is an actual chance for him to be the Borussia Dortmund coach also next season.
Okay, a chance that he needs to grasp by at least finishing fourth, though. Dortmund now in seventh, 29 points, 3 points off fourth place, which is now occupied by Wolfsburg, who've been quietly, almost under the radar, getting good results, a particularly good one away to Leverkusen, a 1-0 win. Leverkusen looked very low on ideas and options against this pretty excellent Wolfsburg defence. Oliver Glasner there, not necessarily making his name with expansive, thrilling football, but a very competent performance and a very competent coach, it seems. Is it time that we give him a bit more respect maybe on this pod, Christoph?
Yeah, they only have conceded two defeats so far this season, and they only conceded 19 goals, so they are defensively very stable. You can see that there is a strong cohesion on the pitch. It's very difficult to play against them. Because their pressing is organized very well. So yes, they are a good team, but not a fascinating to watch team, to be honest. And that is not my way of saying they are boring. They are not boring, but they are also not fascinating.
Yeah, I think that is true, not just of the team, but of Wolfsburg as a club, perhaps.
but I have another team for our listeners that we haven't mentioned very often, and they are on their way upwards, and that is Eintracht Frankfurt. And they,
yes, I was just thinking about them.
Yeah, and they are on their way to be to look thrilling again. With Luka Jovic on loan from Real Madrid coming in, and I mean their 5-1 win at Bielefeld was very impressive, but altogether their form in recent weeks has improved. Now they are sixth of the table. I think we tended to oversee them a bit because they had so many draws in the first half of the season, already 9 draws and only 2 defeats. A lot of these draws were sometimes a bit unlucky. And so I think in the second half of the season, we can actually expect a lot from them.
I think you're absolutely right. Frankfurt really looked like a team reborn since the arrival of Luka Jovic. I saw somebody post a question, why doesn't everyone get a Real Madrid striker on loan? It seems a good idea.
Yeah, because not everybody is selling a player to Real Madrid and to ring him up later on to find he is unhappy and bring him back. And also Philip Kostic, who is a personal friend of Luka Jovic, he looks reborn since Jovic is back at Frankfurt. That's also interesting. So, and Frankfurt, I think Adi Hütter did a very good job in the last years at Frankfurt. They were suffering a bit from... Because after the successful season in international football, they had to sell their fantastic front three, including Luka Jovic. But now they managed to, find their way back. And again, I think we can look forward to what we can see from Eintracht Frankfurt in the last 16 matches of the season.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is, because of the weakness of the teams ahead of them, they are now only 2 points off the Champions League places.
Yeah, exactly.
Would have seemed impossible before Christmas, but that good little run has done enough to put them in contention, which would, of course, be the fulfillment of a big dream in Frankfurt to get into the Champions League. And it might just be possible thanks to Luka Jovic's goals.
I think it would be fantastic, especially for Frankfurt, because even if they don't finish in the Champions League, but in a Europa League spot, because international football is embraced so passionately at Frankfurt. Also the EuroLeague. I mean, there were so many clubs who treated the Europa League in a way shabbily because they were not really interested. But at Frankfurt, you had the feeling, we are so happy. We can go to Europe. We can go in thousands to Portugal and to France and wherever. And it would be nice if that could happen next season, if we can travel in thousands through Europa, then hopefully.
Yeah, it would be amazing. I agree. I mean, Frankfurt deserve it, I think, on the strength of their home fans alone and the atmosphere that they can create. It would be lovely to see. Frankfurt now also officially at the heart of Europe, because their club HQ, I'm not sure if you've seen this, Christoph, the street was recently renamed Im Herzen Europas, at the heart of Europe. So there you go. Yeah. Maybe in football terms, at the heart of Europe too. Very soon.
Yeah, that's a line from a club song. So they embraced European football for a long time. I mean, they had their European final in, was it 1959, against Real Madrid?
61, I think.
Oh, 61.
The 6-3? Really. Oh, no, I always forget. We were both wrong. 1960.
So they had their big European final. I mean, they had the European final in the Europa League against Chelsea, but the big one...
Semi-final.
The big one was... the big final was in 1960 when they were playing Real Madrid in Glasgow in front of, I think, 120,000 people, and were defeated 7-3 by the great Real Madrid. But ever since then, European football was something special for Frankfurt supporters.
Absolutely. And it is nice to see them do well. I think there's something a little bit romantic about the way they go about things and the special connection that they have with their fans. So good to see them do well. Up in sixth place now, just behind Gladbach, but very much in range of that Champions League spot. Now, I think things will change frequently at the top of the table. Everyone's so closely together. Even Union, after that defeat against Augsburg, still only 4 points off the Champions League places. So, Christoph, there is still hope for you to do your big follow-up book about Union in the Champions League. We'll catch up with you, and indeed you, dear listener, next week to talk about all the crazy things and goings-ons in the Bundesliga. Do come back to us then. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.